Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator tonight for this important COVID-19 update from the City of Mississauga. Joining me this evening is Mayor Bonnie Crombie, along with Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Officer of Health, Region of Peel, and Michelle DeManuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners. We also have on the line City Councilors, Senior City Staff Sean McKenna, Staff Superintendent Peel Regional Police, Chief Dundas, Peel Regional Paramedics, and Brian Laundrie from Region of Peel. Before we hear from our speakers, let me start by explaining how a telephone town hall works. Right now, residents from all over Mississauga are answering their phones and connecting to the discussion. You will have a chance to ask your COVID-19 questions of the mayor and our panel, and to raise issues that are important to you. You can get in line to ask a question at any time by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You'll then be put through to an operator who will take your question and put you in the queue. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your questions will be read out loud by me, the moderator. Our emphasis tonight will be on providing important COVID-19 updates and hearing the questions residents want to ask the city and our panel. Again, here are a few things to keep in mind when you ask a question tonight. When using your phone to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad and you'll be routed to an operator who will ask you to provide your name and the nature of your question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your question will be read aloud by me. Please try to keep your questions as brief as possible. There are many people on the line tonight, and we want to try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Please ensure your question is related to COVID-19. For those of you just joining, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for this COVID-19 telephone town hall with Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Health Officer for Region of Peel, and Michelle DeManuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners. We are also joined tonight by City Councilors, Senior City Staff, Sean McKenna, Staff Superintendent for the Peel Regional Police, Chief Dundas from Peel Regional Paramedics, and Brian Laundrie from Peel Region. It's my job to keep this conversation moving smoothly and to make sure we get to hear your questions and have as much discussion as possible. Before we start getting to your questions, I would like to invite Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lowe, and Michelle DeManuel to say a few words. Mayor Crombie, we'll start with you.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us this evening for our COVID-19 Teletown Hall. Tonight, we will be providing you with an update on our city entering the gray zone in the Ontario government's COVID-19 framework, as well as other important information on our vaccine rollout. But most importantly, we want to hear from you and the questions that you have. I also want to thank our panelists and the city councilors who are joining us tonight. Our panelists include Dr. Lawrence Lowe, who is our Medical Officer of Health for Peel Region, Michelle DeManuel, who is the President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, Sean McKenna, Staff Superintendent at Peel Regional Police, Peter Dundas, Chief of Peel Paramedics, and Brian Laundrie from the Region of Peel as well with Peel Public Health. The councillors who have joined us tonight are Councillor Stephen Dasko from Ward 1, Councillor Karen Rass from Ward 2, Councillor Chris Fonseca from Ward 3, Councillor Matt Mahoney from Ward 8, Councillor Pat Sato from Ward 9, and Councillor Sue McFadden from Ward 10. The city's leadership team is led by Paul Mitchum, who is our city manager and our chief administrative officer, the CAO of our city, and he'll be joining us tonight as well with his team, including Darren Rizzi, who is our fire chief and director of emergency management at the City of Mississauga, Gary Kent, who is our commissioner of corporate services and our chief financial officer, Sherry Lichterman, our commissioner of community services, Andrew Whittemore, our Commissioner of Planning and Building, Jeff Wright, our Commissioner of Transportation and Works, Andrea Maxwell, our City Solicitor, Sam Rogers, our Director of Enforcement. Thank you all for joining us. It's so great when we can get all of our team, our hospital and public health partners together with city staff to answer those questions on people's minds. I also want to thank my council colleagues who have joined us on the line tonight. It may be hard to believe, but today marks 1 year since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. And as we mark the National Day of Observance for COVID-19, we remember those we lost to the virus and reflect on the impact that the pandemic has had on each and every one of us. I know we all can't wait to put the pandemic behind us, and I'm hopeful that with our vaccine rollout, we can get back to some semblance of normal very soon, and I hope that we'll soon begin to recover. I want to thank everyone for their patience, their understanding, and for listening to the advice of Peel Public Health as we continue to navigate this crisis. On Monday, the Region of Peel entered the gray lockdown zone on the province's COVID-19 framework. You might be wondering, what does this mean exactly for Mississauga? Some key restrictions within the gray zone include no indoor organized public events and social gatherings except with members of the same household, which are people who live, but people who live alone are allowed to have close contact with another household, with one other household, I should say. There's also a limit of 10 people for outdoor organized public events and social gatherings where physical distancing can be maintained. Indoor and outdoor service for restaurants, bars, food, and drink establishments remain closed. Retail, including discount and big box retailers, liquor stores, hardware stores, and garden centers, are allowed to open with 25% capacity. While moving into the gray zone is a positive step forward, allowing for some of our small businesses to reopen, I was disappointed we weren't moved into the red zone, which would have allowed for more businesses to open. The reason we were moved into gray and not red was because we did see an uptick in our case counts last week after 7 straight weeks of declining numbers. And most importantly, the R factor, the fundamental indicator of community transmission, was over 1. When you have an R factor over 1, it means that every person in the community who contracts COVID-19 will give it to at least one other person. The threat of exponential growth becomes real and significant at that point. But here's some promising news. We're heading back into the right direction. According to Peel Public Health's latest epidemiology report, Peel is averaging 88 cases per 100,000, and that's down from 95 last week. Mississauga, and this is where it gets really exciting, is averaging 63 cases per 100,000, and that's down from 74 last week. More importantly, Mississauga's R number has once again dipped below 1, is now at 0.91%. And this is all because of the hard work of Mississauga residents, businesses, and faith-based groups. Because of our progress, I've asked Dr. Lowe and the Premier to consider allowing Mississauga to move into the red zone with or without the rest of the region. Our small business owners are seeing Mississauga residents, their customers, going into neighboring cities like Oakville to shop and dine out when our numbers here warrant us being in the red zone too. We need a targeted approach that is fair and equitable for Mississauga residents and for Mississauga business owners. We can no longer afford to be held back just because our case numbers in other cities in our region aren't quite there yet. Dr. Lowe has assured me that he will be bringing my request to the Chief Medical Officer of Health, and we will await his response later in the week. I'd like to switch gears for a moment and provide an update on the vaccine rollout in Mississauga. We've already vaccinated more than 60,000 residents in Peel so far. Thousands of residents, 80 and over, have also registered for vaccinations through the Trillium Health Partners, either online or on the phone. I again encourage everyone 80 and older, if you have a loved one 80 and older, to visit Trillium's website and book a vaccination appointment. If you don't have internet access or are having trouble booking online, please call Peel Region's COVID helpline and there'll be somebody there to help you book the appointment. That number is 905 905-791-5202. I'll say that again in case you want to write that down. 905-791-5202. I'm also so thrilled that all five of our mass vaccination sites are fully operational, where the vast majority of our residents will receive their vaccine when it's their turn. We now have the capacity to vaccinate thousands and thousands of people every single day. All we need now is more supply. If you want to register online with Trillium Health Partners, that website is trilliumhealthpartners.ca, and you will be able to easily follow the indicators for where to register for the COVID-19 vaccine. It was announced yesterday that Mississauga and all of Peel Region will be taking part in a new pilot project that will see eight of our primary care partners administer the AstraZeneca COVID Shield vaccine to residents ages 60 to 64. And the impacts on our businesses, the age group 60 to 64 was chosen because right now it's recommended that the AstraZeneca COVID Shield vaccine should be only used for people under the age of 65. Primary care providers participating in the pilot will not be taking appointments, but instead have already begun directly contacting eligible Mississauga residents to book appointments. Unfortunately, the AstraZeneca vaccines being supplied to Peel are just a tiny fraction of the almost 200,000 doses that the province has received. I was disappointed that we weren't also included in the pharmacy pilot project where the vast majority of those vaccines are headed. Peel as a whole has been one of the hardest hit regions in the country during the pandemic, and ensuring we have the supply to quickly vaccinate as many residents as possible is critical to our recovery efforts. Along with Toronto, Mississauga, and the rest of Peel region, we've been in lockdown longer than any other region in the province and maybe in the country. And the impacts on our businesses, our residents, and our faith-based groups has been enormous. My priorities over the coming weeks will be continuing to advocate to the province that Mississauga get its fair share of vaccines. It's only right that Mississauga and all of Peel Region is prioritized. And now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Lowe for his comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening to everybody, councillors, colleagues, and Mississauga. It's a pleasure to be able to address you on a somber anniversary. As Mayor Crombie identified, today marks 1 year since the World Health Organization identified transmission occurring in many different countries and labeled the COVID-19 outbreak a pandemic. A worldwide pandemic that has certainly had its impacts on many people. And I really do want to highlight the sacrifices of our community were not for naught, because we still remember that even with the measures that have been taken, residents have fallen sick, sometimes severely so, and we have also lost a number of residents in the region of Peel, and our thoughts and prayers and condolences are with them and their families, especially on this occasion. I want to highlight as well that we are starting to get into the most challenging part of the pandemic. The end is in sight with the arrivals of anticipated arrival of vaccine and mass vaccination in our community. I'm very glad that just in view of knowing how hard hit our community was, Peel Public Health was able to work very closely with our hospital partners, Trillium in Mississauga and William Osler in Brampton, and we have been able to stand up a number of mass vaccination sites, both at our hospitals and also throughout our community. They are ready to go. Staff are hired, ready to go, and insofar as the hospitals have been continuing their push and their role with their limited allocations, all of us taking the decision to unlock, with the limited supply, the 80-plus group to offer protection to our seniors as we continued our Phase 1 healthcare worker campaign. We also have community clinics that are ready to go. And I do say that because I want to highlight and really request patients from the community, especially as you try to book appointments. A lot of this is currently limited by existing supply shortages. But we have understood from our provincial partners that more allocation is on the way. And as that happens, availability of appointments will increase both in the overall number as well as in the various sites that may be that vaccine may be delivered at. We also have piloted a number of mobile sites, and we are also piloting a primary care distribution of the AstraZeneca vaccine in our community here in Mississauga and throughout the region of Peel. And while those aren't open to the public yet, they provide us valuable information so that we are ready to scale up once the supply chain stabilizes and improves. So I do ask for patience, and certainly for those of you who are trying to book an appointment because you're eligible within the 80-plus group or an other identified priority group, I ask if you aren't able to get an appointment now, please don't give up. Do try again later. And if you need help, certainly the phone number that Mayor Crombie shared, 905-791-5202. Again, 905-791-5202 is there to assist you through the booking process. I do also, in asking for patience, want to ask your continued patience as we move forward in the province's reopening framework. I know that there are a lot of people who have been very tired. I do know that the measures that have been taken to date have been long and lasting, extensive, and have really seen sacrifices on the part of our businesses and residents. I want you to, first of all, know that your sacrifices were not in vain. I think there is clear evidence now, clear data that is showing that many lives and many hospitalizations were saved and prevented, respectively, as a result of the measures that were taken. Recent comparisons with other high-income countries show that the intensity of the pandemic that occurred in Canada was nowhere near what was seen in places such as the U.S. or the U.K., and a lot of that is really to the credit of the community for all that you have done in making sure that as many of us as possible can make it through this human health emergency. With the increasing growth of variants in our community, it is imperative, especially now, that as we try to fade out the measures that have been in place that have really kept all of us safe, that we also don't do it too quickly such that we find ourselves in a third wave. A third wave would, again, cost many more lives, again, strain our healthcare and hospital system, and would actually challenge our vaccination efforts, both from the overall absolute number of cases that would need to be resolved, the transmission that would need to be resolved, but also from a resourcing perspective where many people who otherwise would be vaccinating may have to get called in to assist with the treatment of sick individuals. But to the extent that we can move gradually, especially with variants in the midst, just for a little while longer, it gives us the higher probability that we will see finally and then an exit permanently from the measures and all the different colors that we have we've had to live and make our recommendations under within the provincial framework. So I'm looking forward to the question and discussion tonight. I want to let residents know that I know it has not been an easy time. About our team here at Peel Public Health, working together with our partners across the community, continue to work tirelessly to ensure that you are safe and protected throughout this human health emergency. And I want to thank you for your sacrifices that have saved so many more that might have been lost and have really made the difference in this pandemic. And I hope you are given any and all support that is in recognition of the disproportionate burden that our, the City of Mississauga and the Region of Peel has borne in this fight against this novel human health emergency. And with that, I'll thank you all. I look forward to questions, and I'll pass back to Joni.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. I'll ask Michelle DeManuel at Trillium Health Partners to share some remarks. Michelle.
Thank you, Jody, and thank you, Madam Mayor, for the invitation again tonight to be invited into the lives of our community is a great honor, as always, and to share that with so many of my colleagues who have worked alongside us this past year. There's already been a number of acknowledgments about this year, and today in the hospital, I had a chance to connect with about 450 of our staff, representing frontline workers on our inpatient units, people who work in the offices, people who are working in our vaccination center, to reflect on this past year. And one of the things we did at the hospital today was to reflect on the 269 patients that have passed away from COVID-19 this past year, mothers, sisters, fathers, brothers, friends, children. Each of these individuals had an important life and left an important imprint in someone else's life. And we paused and reflected on that throughout our hospital today and on the 1,700 patients that have come through our doors who have tested positive. This has been one of the hardest hit communities, and this has been one of the hardest hit hospitals. In fact, with our sister hospital, Osler and Trillium, no health system has been hit harder in this province. And so I want to first and foremost always thank you for your support, your patience, your understanding as we have worked through this past year, and our partnerships with both the City of Mississauga and the Region of Peel. I also want to acknowledge this past year the 693 staff in our hospital who are servicing and serving the public, 693 who tested positive throughout this year. We continue to respond to this pandemic each and every day. We are continuing still, as the variant now is upon us, to look for ways we can continue to improve upon the work we're doing to keep each other safe and to care for patients. And as Dr. Lowe referenced, we are watching very carefully the data and where the variant is and how it is multiplying to ensure that we do what is necessary to keep people safe, and we will work with our partners in public health and respond as they feel appropriate. I also want to acknowledge and thank the mayor for always including us in your thinking and your discussions so that we can be co-creating solutions together. When I look to the future and I think about yesterday, 1 million Ontarians getting vaccinated. Of that, 30,000 of those people have been vaccinated at Trillium Health Partners, our two centers that we vaccinate. And I just want to acknowledge our partnership in particular with the University of Toronto Mississauga, who's helped us lift our second center. Between those two centers, we have an ability, if we can get the supply, to vaccinate 4,000 people a day and potentially with a third phase in that area more. And so I just want to again thank all of our leaders and Dr. Lowe for advocating for this community for more vaccine. 30,000 people have been vaccinated at Trillium Health Partners, and that gives us all a sense of hope. And I guess what I would say is, notwithstanding the vaccination that is occurring, we already see hope in the increase of those vaccines happening in the weeks ahead. And I do remain hopeful that we will have an ability to take 30,000 that has been done over the last many, many weeks, in fact, 2.5 months, and turn that, Lawrence, in our partnership into more than 30,000 a day. And I know Brian and your team have been working on that. In the coming weeks ahead, we believe we can get there. I just lastly want to say that, you know, we started this past year knowing that we had three very clear actions we could take to fight this pandemic and to fight this virus: masking, physical distancing, and washing our hands. And this past year, we've added a fourth, and that's getting vaccinated. I just want to ask each and every one of you that when it is your time, please get vaccinated. That is what will contribute to the ongoing safety and health of this community. Thank you, Jody, and back to you.
Thanks very much, Michelle. For those of you just joining us, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm pleased to be here with Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, Dr. Lowe, and Michelle DeManuel. They just provided COVID-19 updates for Mississauga residents and businesses as the city has returned to the gray zone of the Ontario COVID-19 framework. Now it's time to go to our live questions for the evening. As a reminder, you can press star 3 on your phone at any time to get into the queue to ask a question for those of you to ask a question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the comments section. Our first question comes to us online this evening, Madam Mayor, and the question is, are there mass vaccination sites opening in Mississauga?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll start it off. I'll kick it off, and I'll pass it off to Dr. Lowe and to Michelle DeManuel as well. So to the questioner, there are 5 sites in Mississauga, and they will be open 8 to 8, and they are all open now. So the first one, which opened February 11th, is at 7120 here on Ontario Street, which is just north of Derry. It's at the Region of Peel headquarters. The UTM building, the Recreation Athletic and Wellness Center, it opened March 1st. Of course, our beautiful Trillium Health partners, Mississauga Hospital at 100 Queensway, opened back in December on December 22nd. Paramount Fine Food Center at the Field House opened on March 3rd, and at the International Center, which is 6900 Airport Road, opened March 10th. Why don't I ask Dr. Lowe or maybe Michelle DeManuel to give you a little more information about our mass vaccination sites and their plans for them. Dr. Lowe or Michelle?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Maybe I'll start, and I'll be happy to pass it over to Michelle if she has any specific comments around the Trillium sites. And I do want to also note that we have Brian Laundrie, who's one of our directors in health services, who is on the call with me too, and will also be able to provide additional details. But I think I'll start by answering this question. The sites are ready to go, and this is really a testament to the work of our team here at Peel Public Health, but also in collaboration with our hospital partners at Trillium and across the healthcare system. We were determined to make sure that March 1st, or at least by early March, that the clinics would be up and ready to go. Right now, the biggest challenge, though, is we don't have vaccine, which, as you can imagine, is one of the more significant problems. We do have vaccine, limited amounts of vaccine available for priority groups and through our hospital clinics and partners at their sites, which are for in Mississauga Trillium at the hospital and also at the University of Toronto Mississauga site. A limited number of doses that are available for seniors 80 plus at this point in time. Obviously, our goal would be once the supply starts to come in, that we will continue to ramp up and increase the activity at our clinics to ensure that more appointments and more sites throughout the region will be available. There will also be mobile vaccination sites that may do pop-ups or certain congregate living settings. Those were used to actually vaccinate all of our long-term care and retirement homes in the first couple months of January and February, but would be deployed into the broader community as well. So don't fear if you don't live next to one of the big mass vaccination sites. There will be a broader outreach through the mobile program as well. But to the extent that those mass vaccination sites form the backbone of our program, once we have vaccine in place and it is your turn to get a shot, I encourage you to make an appointment and to make sure that you're doing your part to help end the pandemic here. Michelle, I don't know if you wanted to speak a bit about the great work that your team is doing at the hospital and at UTM.
Dr. Lowe, the only thing I would add is, as you know, we take our direction from you with respect to the eligibility criteria. I think the mayor referenced that we are open from 8 to 8. And you can register, and as you become eligible, we will reach out to you and schedule an appointment. And as I said earlier in my comments, we right now on average are running probably about 1,100 vaccines a day. Our plan is by the end of next week, we hope to be up to 2,500, and then as we turn the corner into the week later, 3,000 a day. So I do feel that we're, as you said, Dr. Lowe, our plan was to be ready March 1st, and now we're exercising that plan.
Thank you very much for those responses. Our next question comes to us online from Virginia. Virginia asks, will Mississauga be getting more vaccines than other regions because we are in a hot spot? I'm going to throw the question to Dr. Lowe, as I understand the mayor is having some issues with her phone line. Dr. Lowe, can I send you that question?
Absolutely, Jody. I'm happy to answer that question. At this point in time, the province has indicated that the base vaccine allocation is calculated based on population, on a population per capita basis. However, they have also announced that in the phase two rollout, certain communities that have seen higher rates of transmission of COVID will be able to access additional supplies, and Peel was identified as one of those. So, obviously, more information to come from our ministry partners, but I know that our regional council has advocated tirelessly. Mayor Crombie, all of our councillors, and have they passed a motion that has called on getting vaccines for here and for Peel. And from a scientific perspective, you know, my view is, especially just with the rates of transmission the way they are in the Greater Toronto Area. To the extent that you can stop the fire here in the Greater Toronto Area and in Peel, you're not just protecting these communities, but you're also preventing further secondary spread into the rest of the province of Ontario. So thanks so much. And Jody, I'll pass it back to you.
Oh, it's Mayor Crombie. I'm sorry, we did have some technical trouble. Dr. Lowe, did you tell them that we would be getting our share of the 900,000 doses in phase two? And that we're hopeful to participate, well, we are participating in the primary care providers, which will give us our share of 29,000 more doses that we'll be sharing along with Hamilton, Toronto, Guelph, Peterborough, Simcoe, Muskoka, and Peel. So we are waiting for more vaccines. I'm sure you explained all that. I'm sorry I got cut off halfway. But thank you for the question, an excellent question as well. And we have asked, by the way, to participate in the pilot project that includes the pharmacy test pilot, but we'll hopefully have more information about that later in the week or next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Next question is coming to us live from Doug. Doug has a question about Mississauga within the broader region of Peel. Doug, why don't you go ahead with your question, please?
Thank you, Jody. If I look at the numbers each day that come out and reporting for the region of Peel, and if you split out the numbers for Mississauga compared to the population, very, very low. And if you compare those numbers to the same numbers for Halton, Durham, and York, the question that you have to ask yourself is, why aren't we in the red zone?
Doug, thank you for the question. That is a great question. And of course, you know, a few years ago, there was a governance review with respect to regional governance. And we had hoped at that point that we would be separated from the region of Peel and be a standalone city so that we could control our own destiny. But as luck has it, the province pulled away from the regional governance review, and we are still one region with one public health unit. So in the past, it has been argued that we stay with the region. But now, you know, the numbers had been 60% Brampton numbers, 40% Mississauga, but now they're more than 50% higher in Brampton. We're at 63 cases, rather, per 100,000, and they're over 125. So there is a significant difference, and that's why I'm appealing to Dr. Lowe to move us forward through the framework without holding Mississauga back, because our businesses and our residents have worked really hard to drive down those numbers. And, you know, we've asked for some targeted support for Brampton, ensuring that the workers have additional vaccines available, et cetera, targeted support for Brampton. Meanwhile, move us through. So he has told me that he will certainly raise the issue with Dr. Williams, but ultimately Dr. Lowe recommends Dr. Lowe will recommend to Dr. Williams, who again will recommend to the Premier, who will make the ultimate decision. There is precedence for a region to be separated, as we saw with Windsor and Essex region back in the first wave. So we're very hopeful, but you're quite right. We followed the guidelines, we followed the health protocols and the labor guidelines, and so we are ready, and I'm hopeful Dr. Lowe feels the same way. I'm going to put him on the spot, I'm sure he'll say he will raise it with Dr. Williams, but won't give us a definitive go ahead just yet. So Dr. Lowe, what do you think? Doug and I, we want to move forward.
Well, thanks so much, Madam Mayor. And Doug, thank you for the question. I think it's it's important to put a few things in context. I would maybe respectfully disagree with the characterization that the numbers are quote unquote low. I think they're relatively low, especially compared to where they were at the peak. But if you take a look at where the numbers are, we are still, some degrees above the 40 per 100,000 of the bottom end of the control zone. And to the extent as well that the numbers that we're reporting right now in Mississauga are the same kind of numbers that we had just prior to the second wave taking off in October, just after the Thanksgiving long weekend. It's important to remember that the virus is, you know, not necessarily thinking of a specific timeline or schedule. And if we do move too quickly, we risk essentially handing control of the timeline back to the virus. So I think when I recommend a gradual approach and one that really takes into account the whole region, I'm looking at both the fact that, certainly the municipalities are all highly interconnected, but also our hospital systems are highly interconnected. And you heard from our, Trillium CEO that both Osler and Trillium have seen significant challenges throughout this pandemic amongst hospital systems here in the province of Ontario. And as the medical officer of health for the whole region, I need to consider that if you're still seeing challenges within the hospital system in Brampton, if they need care and they need to go elsewhere, if Brampton is at capacity, you know that the next place they're going to come is going to be to Mississauga. And so I think to the extent that I recognize the numbers are the numbers, and there are other considerations beyond the specific numbers that go into any decision recommendations. I have certainly heard Madam Mayor's very clear request. I will include that in the course of my overall discussions and dialogue with the Chief Medical Officer of Health, in addition to the various other considerations that I've outlined in my answer here. So thanks so much for the question, and I think it's a stay tuned. Let's see where it goes. I, too, am hopeful and optimistic for both Mississauga, but also for the whole region of Peel as a whole, to see where things land in the next week or so. Thanks, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us live from Estella. Estella's on the phone and has a question about the safety of different vaccines. Estella, go ahead.
Okay, hi, good evening. Thank you for having me. I have a question. How safe is AstraZeneca? And if I don't take it now, can I choose another vaccine in the future?
Estella, it's Mayor Crombie. I will say to you that all the vaccines are safe for your use, and depending on your age, if you're over 65, then probably AstraZeneca wouldn't be appropriate for you. But I do not believe that we'll have a choice of which vaccine when one becomes available, depending on when our age is called up. So Dr. Lowe or Michelle, do you want to respond about the safety of the vaccines and whether we can choose which vaccine if we have a preference? Please.
So thanks, Madam Mayor, and thanks, Estelle, for the question. The best vaccine for COVID-19 is the first one that you are offered. Anything that has been approved by Health Canada has undergone rigorous reviews to ensure safety and effectiveness and the applicability of that within the Canadian population. It's specific to the AstraZeneca vaccine. I know that there's lots of questions around around, for example, the recent news of certain countries deciding to hold back on using it while they investigate. To me, as a former physician who worked in vaccine safety, that actually gives me confidence, because usually what happens is you actually, when you start to see a signal, any sort of signal, because they take it so seriously, they say, all right, stop, let's look at it, let's investigate it. Oftentimes they'll just find that it actually isn't related to the vaccine, that it may be related to just usual background rate of diseases as they form in the community. It is a way for us to be absolutely sure, as the vaccine is rolled out, that it is living up to its mark of being safe and effective for broader use in the population. And it is also important to remember that over the course of millions and millions of doses that have been given worldwide so far, the data has been borne out that the vaccine tends to have very mild side effects, things along the lines of a sore arm, redness, sometimes a mild fever. That really speaks to your immune system responding to the vaccine so that if COVID-19 ever shows up, if you're ever inoculated, your immune system is already primed and ready to deal with the novel invader, which is not so novel anymore with the immunity provided by the vaccine. So I think to the extent that we can guarantee you that whichever vaccine clinic you show up at in the Region of Peel, you will be offered a vaccine that is safe and effective and approved by Health Canada. I would encourage everyone, if you're eligible, whatever vaccine you're offered, whatever vaccine I'm offered, that is a shot that you want to take so that we can try to get back to normal quicker, sooner rather than later. Thanks, and I'll pass back to you, Jordan.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us from Brian. Brian's asked that I read his question, and his question is the following. Is there an increase of the COVID-19 variants in the Peel region? How current is that number?
That's an excellent question. And of course, what we understand now is over 30% of all new cases are of one of the variants of concerns. We're calling them VOCs. And I know that we have over 1,000 positives for the variant mutations. And we have, of course, the B117, the UK, for the most part, the majority of them are the UK variant. We have discovered some of the B1351, which originates in South Africa, and we do have a few now in Mississauga, actually, that is the Brazilian variant, the P1. But I think Michelle or Dr. Lowe would be better qualified to discuss overall the different variants that exist in Peel region and their current numbers and status. Over to Dr. Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Certainly the variants of concern are called such because of, as we are moving towards reopening, as many of us are fatigued and tired, and as vaccine is almost within our grasp, one thing that we have seen from other countries in the world is that where variants have really taken hold and accelerated, they can often spread more easily and result in an exponential growth in a much more rapid timescale. Certainly this is the experience of Ireland, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, and also most recently in Newfoundland, where in an outbreak driven by a B117 variant, they actually went from 0 to 100 in a few days. Which really speaks to the significance of it. And just for comparison, 100 cases in St. John's, Newfoundland, for the entire region of Peel on a per capita basis would have been 1,300 cases in a new day in a single day, which would have been twice as high as our peak here in the region of Peel. So it's for that reason that I continue to advocate for a cautious approach to reopening. We have seen the variants grow. From just a handful, at least in mid-February, which was where we were really trying to take a look and see what the impact was at that time, till now, where we've now, as Mayor Crombie mentioned, have over 1,000 screen-positive variants. The concern being that the wild-type coronavirus, the original that was imported by returning travelers, is on the decline. But we are seeing an increase, a greater and greater proportion of positive cases that are testing for variants of concern. So long story short, we need to continue to be careful, unless we are seeing two trends where, one type, the wild type of COVID is dying out, but the variants are starting to accelerate, and we don't want to add fuel to the fire if the variants are accelerating at a pace that is unsustainable. So I hope that answers the question. I'll pass back to you, Jordan.
Jody, it's Michelle. Can I just offer a couple of observations on that?
Absolutely.
Just Dr. Lowe, I think this is an important point, and I know many have been watching this. And just to give you a sense of Dr. Lowe's comments and how they actually impact the actual healthcare system, as of yesterday, we had just under 50 patients in our hospital with COVID-19, and 34.6% of those patients had been screened for a variant of some kind. So I just want to reiterate what Dr. Lowe was saying about the importance of watching these numbers and to the trajectory of the variant, because as we can see, it's starting to take on a significant portion of those patients that are being admitted into the hospital. And then, of course, as we see that doubling time start to reduce, these are the kinds of things that we work together on to ensure that we can advise the mayor and others on the environment in which decisions are being made. Thank you. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Our next question comes to us live on the phone from Mohammed. Mohammed has a question about vaccines for seniors who are under the age of 80. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Yes, my wife and myself, we're 79 years old. Not 80, 79 years old. And we would like to know when we will be getting the vaccine, where we have to go to get the vaccine, and how we can arrange to get the vaccine.
Those are all very good questions, Mohammed. Thank you. And we think you will, depending on the supply, you're the next age group, 70 plus, to receive the vaccine. So hopefully April or sooner. I did list the sites, but I would recommend that you go online to TrilliumHealthPartners.ca to make an appointment when 70 plus is called up. Or you can always call that number I announced earlier. And the phone number there again is 905-791-5202. And perhaps Dr. Lowe or Michelle would like to speak to when 79-year-olds will get their vaccine. Do you have any more information? Would it be just depend on supply, Dr. Lowe?
Absolutely, Madam Mayor, you're correct. It is entirely a supply issue at this point in time. We have a limited allocation and have been able to unlock a limited amount of that allocation for seniors 80 plus. Patience really is, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, the name of the game at this point in time. But why don't I actually see if Brian Laundry can actually maybe jump in here and talk a little bit about the importance of prioritization and sort of the various balancing acts that we are navigating here in the context of critical shortages. Brian?
Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question. The prioritization framework is set out for a lot of important reasons, and it's something that we've been asked to follow across the province, so we have an equitable introduction to vaccine for the various population groups, and that's consistent or as consistent as possible. And it's based on three objectives. First is the first criteria applied to the prioritization is to prevent death. The second is prevent illness, hospitalization, and ICU admission. And the third is to reduce transmission. So the province has gone to considerable lengths to implement this ethical framework across its prioritization. So the first priority groups are working their way through. As many speakers before have mentioned, we're in an environment of limited supply. So this is not an indication of value or of importance, but just of risk overall into the population. So following the National Advisory Committee immunization guidelines and the ethical framework, we have a really important, or we have a consistent prioritization framework. I would add, though, that the definition of 80 plus year olds is people born in 1941 or earlier. So perhaps if you're 79 and going to turn 80 this year, you would qualify. So you might, maybe that's hopeful for you. Thanks, Jody. I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes to us live from Francis. Francis has a question about clinic hours of operation. Francis, go ahead with your question, please.
Oh, hi. My question is about not necessarily immediately, because I understand that vaccine supply is just arriving, but are there plans to operate our mass vaccination centers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as is being done in certain other jurisdictions that are really moving along with their vaccinations?
Francis, excellent questions. They're currently open 8 to 8, but I know based on supply they'd like to open them 24 hours a day. Dr. Lowe, I've heard you say that yourself. Why don't you respond to Francis?
Yeah, Francis, the short answer is yes. We're going to look at piloting 24/7 at select sites initially just to see how demand works once supply is available. Thanks so much for the question, and we'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Lori. Lori has a question about vaccines for people who are immunocompromised. Lori, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you please tell me when people who are immunocompromised will be vaccinated? What group
Lori?
Do they fall?
Exactly, Lori. That's an excellent question because I hear people who are under 80 but have are immunocompromised, and they ask all the time, could they be given special consideration? So I think I'll just ask Dr. Lowe to respond to that, please.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Madam Mayor. Thank you for the question, Lori. Again, vaccine supplies remain critically short at this point in time. Certainly, as more supply becomes available, we will be able to unlock more appointments and certainly move to more priority groups. Immunocompromised, as well as other individuals with pre-existing medical conditions, have been identified in the Phase 2 rollout of the provincial framework. And once the province has given the go-ahead for that priority group and supply is available, you will be, and together with the other people who identify with the same condition, will be advised through the Peel Region website. The best place to look is actually peelregion.ca/COVID-19 vaccine. That's again peelregion.ca/COVID-19 vaccine. All the information about groups that are being vaccinated and priorities and all that other stuff, that'll be up there. Thanks so much for the question.
The next question is from Graham. Graham is on the line, and Graham wants to know about prioritization criteria for vaccines. Go ahead, Graham.
Thank you. I'm looking at figure one of Peel Region's phased vaccination approach that I got from the website. And in phase two, it says adults 50 to 79, adults with chronic conditions, and essential workers. And then in fine print immediately under it, it says, this is not an exhaustive list of priority populations. Additional information will be made available at peelregion.ca coronavirus vaccine. Could this chart be updated? And where would one go to find out what those additional populations would be? Both my wife and I are 77, and we do have other underlying health conditions, so I'm just sort of wondering. And I agree with Dr. Lowe when he says cautious is better, and also I'll take any vaccine I can get.
Graham, we can't wait to give you the first vaccine available when the 70-plus with underlying conditions come open. Certainly in the phase two, we'll be dealing, as you said, with 50 up, chronic conditions, essential workers, and people who can't work from home. It won't be until phase three that will be open more so to the public that will be able to receive their vaccine either at the pharmacy or at their primary care provider. So Dr. Lowe, will these categories change at all, and how will we communicate that to our residents, just on the website, or will there be other ways as well?
Thanks so much for the question, Graham. Thanks, Madam Mayor. So at this time, vaccine supply remains critically short, and certainly as more vaccine comes available, we will make more appointments and unlock more priority groups per the provincial direction that I'll be provided. So that's why the chart looks like that right now. The asterisk is, basically saying that we are waiting for the province to provide us with more allocation and also with further clarity on how those priority groups will be defined and rolled out. So I think it's really vital, as I said with the previous answers as well. A lot of this is just really driven by supply at this point in time. But obviously, with increasing supply, increasing groups will be notified. And Madam Mayor, you're correct. That website is the best place to look, and certainly there'll be other notices, certainly through various media appearances that I might have together with you, Madam Mayor, and also through social media, traditional media, print ads, through various community engagement outreach. Maybe I can actually get Brian to talk a little bit about our communications plan at this point in time, because there's a lot of work that's going on there to make sure that we are reaching every single resident with the information that they need to know. Brian?
Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question. Yes, we have a multi-phase communication plan that is very active. I think the website is reviewed daily. Changes are made as necessary. As new information becomes available, we try to update that through multiple channels, including our website. We also have health letters. We have people that subscribe to newsletters that we sent out electronically. We'll be working through our healthcare provider colleagues, through our Ontario health team, certainly through our hospital and other partners, and the municipalities. So we have a multi-phase, multi-pronged approach to communication, but the website's always a good place to go. And according to the phase two sequencing projections of the province, the over 75s are projected to open for eligibility in April. So if all goes well, hopefully that can be adhered to. Again, big asterisk on stability and availability of vaccine supplies, and no firm date or commitment yet. But over 75 is certainly going to be the group based on age that comes after the 80 plus. So stay tuned for all that. Thanks, Jody. Back to you.
Thank you very much. Our next question was submitted online by Enzo. Enzo asks, are proof of vaccine receipts being distributed with the vaccines?
That's an excellent question. I'm going to let Dr. Lowe respond again, but I've heard this talk about a COVID passport or those little yellow immunization cards. Are we going to get those filled out, Dr. Lowe? How will we be able to prove that we've been vaccinated? Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks so much, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Enzo, for the question. Yes, COVAX, which is the provincial tracking system for the coronavirus vaccine rollout, does provide a printed receipt at the end of each appointment, and it is also tracked electronically. So certainly I imagine in the future there may be functionality if it needs to be checked or verified electronically. It's not clear to me necessarily how that would tie into our overall digital yellow cards at this point in time for immunization, nor into any sort of vaccine passports, which are often talked about in the media, but for which I don't believe there's been any specific announcements from the ministry or from the province at this point in time around what that would look like. But to the extent that, yes, you do receive a confirmation for each of your doses, a printed confirmation that is recorded in the provincial system, you do get that proof of vaccination. Thanks, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. Another online question submitted from Judy. Do we know when pharmacies may start giving COVID vaccines?
Oh, Judy, that is a great question. We've asked to participate in the pilot that is ongoing now, but I believe without participating in the pilot, that may not be until the fall. Dr. Lowe, do you have more information about pharmacies and vaccines?
So thank you, Madam Mayor, and Judy, thanks for the question. At this point in time, as I understand it, the province is rolling out a limited supply of AstraZeneca vaccine through pharmacies just to pilot the pharmacy distribution system, but we don't have any further details around exactly when widespread availability would be in pharmacy. Brian, I would pass it to you because I know you have the chart memorized in the back of your head, but I think they had it in phase three at some point. I'll pass it to you.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. I have the chart. I don't have the chart memorized, and that's not on the chart that I know of. The pilot is ongoing, like others have said, and I did not think it was going to be as late as the fall before a vaccine got flowed through the pharmacies, but I don't have any further detail. My apologies. Jody?
Thank you very much, Brian. Our next question was submitted by John. John called it in, asked that I read it aloud. John says, I run a slow pitch league in Mississauga. What is the forecast for the summer as far as parks opening up?
John, it's an excellent question, as always, and certainly the parks are open. It's organized sports that's the problem, and it will depend where we are in the framework at that time. I don't know who is best to talk to the framework, Sherry or Dr. Lowe. Who would like to take that?
So it's Sherry Lichterman, Commissioner of Community Services. Perhaps I can speak to the team sports.
Please go ahead.
Thanks. So, yes, as Mayor Crombie mentioned, team sports are not permitted in our gray lockdown zone. As we move into the red zone, the team sports are only permitted for practices. So we really need to be in the orange zone and below in order for the leagues to start up again. We do have our parks open, and we will be preparing our sports fields, and we certainly hope that by the time we reach the summer, that we are in a an area of the framework where we can permit some level of team activities. So we are all hoping for that. Thanks for your question, and back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much. Kathy submitted a question online. Kathy asks the following: Mayor Crombie is eager to enter the red zone. Hopefully we are successful, but if we're not and cases rise, will you be willing to go back into gray lockdown or stay at home? It's scary to think of a third wave overcoming us again.
Kathy's absolutely right. We do have to be careful. I do heed the advice of Dr. Lowe. I've always been very cautious. I've only spoken about reopening when it's safe to do so. I'm very hopeful that our conditions will hold and continue to decline. I know that our residents, our businesses have worked very hard to bring the numbers down. But the reality is people are moving. Mississaugans do go to Oakville, Burlington, Milton. We know that people in Brampton go up to Vaughan, and that people in Toronto go up to Markham, and we watch their numbers closely too to see if they're affected. And I know that our small businesses, particularly our restaurateurs, are frustrated, especially on Dundas Street in Winston Churchill, when the south side of the street, of course, is Oakville, and they watch their customers crossing the road to for indoor dining or shopping in Oakville. It must be so difficult for them, and there's does ring of inequitable, but certainly if things change, we will pull that emergency brake and we'll go back into whatever category we need to, from orange back to red, from red back down to gray, whatever we need to do so that we can get control of the virus once again, Kathy. I don't know if you want Dr. Lowe to respond. I'm sure he concurs full-heartedly that we will take whatever measures needed to control the virus. Dr. Lowe?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. And so certainly I want to make very clear, and this is actually an opportunity for me to share certainly with our residents and business community who I know are tired and fatigued and who have sacrificed so much. I actually do support a balanced approach to addressing the pandemic. I recognize that closures and curtailments themselves also have health impacts. But the important thing about a balanced approach is that we know that way the where the virus is starting to gain speed, where it's exponentially growing, you have a small window of opportunity to act before you essentially see significant mortality and hospitalizations associated with uncontrolled viral spread. And then also a lot of the negative impacts that people point to with the closures and lockdowns tend to be the exact same ones. Nobody wants to go out and have dinner if they feel like it's ICU roulette. No one wants to go out and shop if they feel like, if they're worried and fearful. Consumer confidence plummets, and we've seen this in countries that got it wrong. In so many places in the world where people got it wrong, you have the exact same issues because ultimately underlying everything is we're in the midst of a human health disaster and emergency. So I think, I think to the question of, would we do, how would we do it? If, certainly if the trends were extremely concerning or worrying, especially with variants in the midst that could accelerate more rapidly, we would need to act very quickly and decisively to move forward. The last thing I'll say is that the emergency brake provision in the provincial framework only allows a move from whatever color you are in within the provincial response framework to gray lockdown, which is essentially where we are right now. So at this point in time, the emergency, if for example, our trends were to worsen, pulling the emergency brake would actually not be an effective maneuver for us at this point in time in the region of Peel. And I understand that the provisions to return to the more restrictive stay-at-home order are embedded within provincial emergency legislation. And given that there is no provincial state of emergency at this point in time, would not necessarily be an option. So it really speaks to the importance that we do not want to go backwards as a community. We do not want to, like all of you, I want to make sure that we're getting out of this, but we're getting out of it safely with a commitment and confidence that we aren't going to have to go backwards like so many other places, Simcoe, Thunder Bay, and most recently Sudbury just announced today have had to. So thanks so much. I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Very much, Dr. Lowe. Paul called in with a question, and he asks, have the men and women of Peel Police been vaccinated for COVID-19?
That's a very good question. I believe that our paramedics have been vaccinated and are now vaccinating our residents. I believe also firefighters are almost completed. Sean McKenna, you're on the call. Please tell me you've had your vaccine, or we can ask Dr. Lowe what the status of it is, yourself and the other critical frontline workers.
Yes.
Sean McKenna, there you go.
Yeah, I'm right here. Thank you, Mayor. No, I have not had my vaccine, and I look forward to the opportunity to getting it. But when the OACP successfully lobbied to have police officers included in the first rollout, we were advised to restrict it to individuals that respond to medical calls for service as part of their regular routine. So we've gotten a significant number of our people done, the vast majority of our frontline officers, and the remainder of us will hopefully be rolled out the second wave. So I'm looking forward to my opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lee. Lee is on the line, and Lee's got a question about the provincial website. Lee, go ahead.
First of all, thank you to the people on the line for the incredible job that you're doing. It means the world to all of us here in Mississauga. My question is, with the provincial website for appointment booking going live on Monday, are residents of Peel to start using that website, or do we stay with the Trillium Health Partners website? Thank you.
Lee, I'm going to allow both Dr. Lowe and Michelle DeManuel to respond, because the Trillium Health Partners has set up a terrific local website where we can sign up to register for the next vaccine right here in Mississauga. There's the phone number. You can call Public Health or go online and do so. On the 15th, the province goes live with their site, but I believe you can register for the next appointment. It could be anywhere in the province, I believe. So Dr. Lowe or Michelle, do you want to speak further to which portal to use to register for a vaccine?
Michelle, if you're all right, I was going to have Brian maybe start, and then you could speak about Trillium's specific website. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So Brian, why don't you take it away and talk a little bit about the plan for the booking system?
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question. Yes, Peel Public Health and the hospitals currently all have booking systems in place for residents and healthcare workers to book their vaccinations. As the provincial booking portal launches, we're all working together and looking at opportunities to make the process as seamless as possible for residents. And we'll keep you updated on what might transition or when we might transition to the provincial system. And when, but at this time, I think it's safe to say, Michelle, you could comment, but in our conversations with staff, it's that none of us will be moving immediately on the 15th, and right now we have the link that can take you to the current booking system available on all our websites and for residents, and Peel Public Health will be keeping the page up to date, certainly on our website, and hospital websites, I believe, also will be doing the same. We're trying to coordinate the communication and the front-facing look to booking, so it's consistent and seamless and easy for residents to book. I'll leave it there, Jody, and over to you, Michelle.
Well, thank you, Brian. And I think the most important point that you made is that we are working collectively, so that whether you go on to the Trillium website, the Peel Public Health website, Osler's website, et cetera, you are given the optionality to connect in with all of us. And we've got a little bit more work to do on that to make it a bit more seamless, but I think we're very close, and I hope that the residents of Mississauga find that access easy. We will be maintaining our current booking system while the provincial system goes live. There are several parts of this province that didn't have the capability to do the online booking more locally. And so we've elected to continue our process. And so you can go on, as the mayor said, you can register with us, and then we'll reach out to you as our availability increases and we have more times to book. We send you an email with your information, and then you can come in and get your vaccine. And as that changes, and if there's further integration that occurs, we'll make sure that our community is aware of that.
Thank you, Michelle. Our next caller is Stephen. Stephen's on the line, and he's got a question about the second vaccine shot. Stephen, go ahead with your question, please.
Thank you, Jody. This is for Dr. Lowe, and it's specifically concerning the Pfizer vaccine. Now, within 2 weeks, myself and my wife, we both received our Pfizer vaccine at the Trillium Health Center. And by the way, they did a wonderful job there. It was absolutely great, and we're quite thankful for that. But then today, we received an email saying that we're waiting 16 weeks for our second shot. Are you confident that this is a safe practice? As I did a quick research on it, and so far Canada is the only country that's doing this practice. And the 16 wait between shots, will this also apply to the other types of vaccines that are being made available, excluding the Johnson & Johnson?
Dr. Lowe, I think that was directly for you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I'm happy to answer the question. I know that our federal counterparts at the National Advisory Committee on Immunization have looked at a lot of real-world data from the UK and from Israel and from the United States where the rollout has occurred and have concluded that an extension of the second dose is not only safe, but it is also effective. From an immunologic perspective, as someone who was previously employed in vaccinology, it makes sense because the reality is that the two doses are about a immune/boost, right? So the boosting is actually provided at a minimum spacing. So the idea is that you don't want to give the two shots too close together, because essentially if you give the first shot, you prime your immune system, you give the second shot too early, then what happens is you're giving the second shot to boost an immune response that is already just getting mounted, so the second shot is wasted. What is less of an issue is if you give the shot a little bit later than the recommended interval. And we can all think about this, with our childhood immunizations. You think about all those months that are put out there. They say, 2, 4, 6, whatever for all those shots. The reality is they don't bring you back exactly at, 60 days. If you have to be a few days late or even a few weeks late, there are delayed dose procedures. But the National Advisory Committee for Immunization has always been very clear that, even if you're quite a bit away from where it was within the minimum dose interval, you should just get a second shot whenever you get a second shot. Because the idea is that you've primed your immune system the first time, and then you're boosting it the second time. And that's no different from I would imagine, to the extent that they've reviewed this, they've reviewed the data, the real-world data and application of it in other countries, and looked at the science. I think that likely supports their recommendation and just what we intrinsically know about vaccines and the minimum spacing intervals between doses. So I hope that helps to provide you some reassurance. The one thing I'll also add as well is the science is always evolving on this. As more and more data comes in, we keep forgetting that it's only been about a year and a bit that we've now known about COVID-19, and it's been even less with the vaccines. But as the data comes in, I have every full confidence in our federal counterparts and certainly the science that I know to be true myself, that the decisions being made will evolve to continue to serve both our overall goal of reducing COVID-19, but continuing to protect Canadians and ensure they get vaccinated in a safe and effective manner. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Monica sent in the next question, and Monica asks the following. My mother is 90 and homebound. When will she be able to get her vaccine?
Oh, that's a terrific question. I know that 90-year-olds, who are living in congregate settings such as long-term care facilities or seniors' homes, have all been vaccinated. And I know that Dr. Lowe has plans for mobile units and drive-throughs, but we're not quite there yet. Dr. Lowe, what options exist for a 90-year-old that is homebound?
Thanks so much, Madam Mayor. I'm going to give this one to Brian Laundrie, who I know has been looking very closely, obviously, at the mobile clinic pilots that we've done, as well as TransHelp, as well as, yes, certainly the drive-thru. So, Brian, do you want to tell a little bit about how we're working on our homebound seniors?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question. Yeah, it's a very difficult population with reduced mobility, and if there's absolutely no way to get out to a clinic, which of course would be the fastest way to get vaccinated, we do have a category of prioritization, a subgroup called adult recipients of chronic home care, and that includes patients and clients who are unable to transport. And we are planning tables working with the LIN and with the providers of the home care services. And that population group is in the phase, either in the end of phase one or very early in phase two, depending. And we're actively doing the planning with those groups right now. So hopefully you'll have information on the best practice soon. Thanks, Jody.
Thanks very much. AV, or Avi, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, is on the line with a question about people who have previously tested positive for COVID-19 and implications for the vaccine. Avi, go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Avi, and my question is people who were diagnosed with who had COVID, but since then they have done the isolation and everything, they don't have any symptoms for months now. When we go, are we eligible to get the shot vaccination, and is it still safe for us to get it?
I think I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe for his opinion on this. So people who have had COVID, how long do they have to wait before they're vaccinated, Dr. Lowe?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. At this point in time, because we don't know how long immunity lasts for, and there is suggestion of reinfection and the idea that it's fleeting, the recommendation is that as you become eligible, that you do consider getting vaccinated. In respect of severe side effects, there's nothing, broadly that has been identified at this point in time, but really that ongoing monitoring and surveillance that I mentioned, it continues to ensure that we are we're looking for anything that might arise or crop up. But long and short of it is, having had COVID before, if you are part of an eligible group, certainly encourage you to get vaccinated at this point in time. Thanks so much.
Our next caller is Harry. Harry's got a question about mixing vaccines. Harry, go ahead with your question, please.
Hello?
Hi, Harry. We can hear
you.
Harry. Please, go ahead.
Oh. Yeah. No, my question is very simple. To the best of my knowledge, the vaccines require two shots, for instance, Pfizer or Moderna. If I get the first shot with one company, do I have to have the second shot from the same manufacturer, or is it safe to use a different, like a second booster shot from a different manufacturer?
You know, Harry, that's something I hadn't considered. That is a great question. I think only the Johnson & Johnson is a one-shot vaccine. So, of course, whether you have Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca, you'll need that second shot. What if it's a different shot that you're being offered, Dr. Lowe?
So, absolutely, Madam Mayor. Thanks so much for the question. Thanks, Harry. At this point in time, when you book an appointment, the aim is to really ensure that you get two of the same vaccine. There is very limited data around mixing and matching at this point in time. Certainly, obviously, the National Advisory Committee Immunization is continuing to monitor that. I don't believe it's being practiced anywhere else, which means that unlike data around the robustness of immunity or different age groups, it's a little bit tougher to get real-world data at this point in time because I don't think any country has necessarily gone ahead and done it. Long story short, at least the commitment in Ontario so far is that the aim will be to get you a second dose, which is the same type of vaccine as the first that you had. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Charlene is on the line next, and she's got a question about getting vaccinated outside of Peel region. Go ahead with your question, Charlene.
Oh, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm a longtime resident within Mississauga, but I had done my entire career at a hospital in downtown Toronto where I've always received my care, and just wonder if they have availability, am I allowed to go out of my own district, or do I have to stay within my residence and do this within Mississauga?
That's a very good question. I'm going to, that came up at council today, Dr. Lowe. Perhaps if they register on the COVAX system, that can be possible. Dr. Lowe, what do you think?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Again, right now, just given limited supply, it all comes down to eligibility first and foremost. But if you are, for example, part of a priority worker group, a healthcare worker, first responder, et cetera, the principle in Peel has been live or work in Peel. And I believe in Toronto, it has been live or work in Toronto. So presumably, if you are still working at that facility in downtown Toronto, then you have the option or choice to get vaccinated in either jurisdiction just on the basis of the rules as well as the provincial eligibility that might apply at the time. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Mary is up next with us. Mary's got a question about retirement homes. Go ahead, Mary. Hi, Mary. Did you want to go ahead with your question for Dr. Lowe? Oh, I will read the question. No problem. Mary asks, in regards to the retirement homes that have all been vaccinated, what is the plan around opening up for visitations? Do we have to be in a specific color zone?
I think I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe and Michelle DeManuel. And you may want to add whether, of course, we need to continue wearing masks even after we've all been vaccinated. Please respond.
Thanks so much, Madam Mayor. Certainly the loosening of restrictions for individuals that have been vaccinated continues to be a active topic of discussion amongst provincial and also federal technical tables. At this point in time, in respect of just broader community measures, Madam Mayor, the recommendation is even if you are vaccinated, to continue with the distancing, the masking, et cetera, just given the levels of community immunity that we're seeing just with the limited supply and rollout we've had so far. However, there is active discussion with a focus on long-term care home and retirement home residents, understanding, of course, that many of these residents would benefit from stimulation, from engagement to assist, to arrest cognitive decline and all these other pieces. There hasn't been any change in provincial directives at this point in time, but I do know it is being actively discussed and looked at and also being informed by the science. Michelle, I know the mayor called on you. I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, Lawrence, I think you've said it all. Thank you.
Tina is next on the line. She's got a question about the mandatory nature of the vaccine. Tina, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, yes. This question is probably most aptly directed to Dr. Lowe. This messenger RNA vaccine, which is completely new, it's experimental, and there's very, very little data with respect to what the long-term effects are. I was calling to find out if it will be an optional thing and that it will not be made mandatory for residents who are, concerned that the development of this vaccine was rushed, and as normally, vaccines are in development for at least 7 to 10 years.
Pass that directly over to you, Dr. Lowe, please.
I think there's a few things that I'd say to that, and certainly appreciate your concerns. I mean, starting out with the fact that no, vaccines aren't going to be made mandatory. Certainly they are voluntary. But I think to the extent that this is our way out of this, this is our way, the more people that are protected, it interrupts community transmission. It gives us security that our vulnerable are going to be protected because it's not transmitting in the community. And we will see hospitalizations and death plummet as they have seen in Israel, as they have started to see in the United Kingdom and the United States. As we saw in our long-term care homes here in Ontario, I think the proof is in the pudding that the data is very much there. I think the second thing that I would highlight is it's not experimental. I think anything that's approved by Health Canada is no longer considered experimental. It is now an approved product for use in the Canadian market, and it has been deemed safe and effective by our regulator. And the final thing I'll share is around a lot of people do point to the nature of both the vaccine as well as the timeline in which it was developed. These vaccines were fast-tracked in so many ways because of the nature of the pandemic and the disruption that it caused in our community. Literally every vaccine company, every scientist across the world, through international collaborations, every regulator, they basically cleared out their desk, and the only goal that they had focused on over the last year was to make sure that there was a vaccine for COVID-19. So yes, other vaccines take 7 to 10 years to develop, but that's because they're competing with other, other vaccines for airtime, other vaccines for research funding, other vaccines for intellect and ingenuity, which basically every single, like the entire vaccine establishment was brought to bear in trying to bring this to light. So that's why it happened so quickly, not because it was rushed. And I think secondly, the other thing I would add is that the technology itself is not new. It was actually technology that has been used to treat cancer previously and was repurposed, safely and effectively to be able to provide us an intervention that will really change the tail of the tape of this in our community. So I certainly hear concerns, and I hope that I've been able to offer some reassurance as to the timeline, the approval, and the reason why this vaccine, should be safe and effective, and why I would highly encourage every resident to consider getting vaccinated when it's their turn. Thanks so much. I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Very much, Dr. Lowe. Anne is on the line, and Anne's got a question about group homes. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes, hi. I'd just like to know when the group homes will be vaccinated. The group homes have, about 8 people or so that live together. I just want to know, are they in phase 2 or phase 3 to be vaccinated?
I'm going to ask Brian Landry to respond to that because group home is a congregate setting, and of course we have vaccinated our long-term care homes and the high-risk seniors homes. I think we're completed all the seniors homes now. Brian or Dr. Lowe, I think it's Brian, what about the congregate settings, the group homes? Have they been completed with vaccinations?
Thank you, Mayor Crombie, and thank you for the question. Not all of the group homes have been vaccinated. They are, again, a high-risk congregate setting that we have planning tables around, and they are indeed in phase 2. So they're clearly identified, and for the most part, we're prepared to support vaccinations in those groups once we get the vaccine and the eligibility. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you very much. We're coming to the end of our time together this evening. There have been so many important questions and robust conversation tonight. Mayor Crombie, do you have any closing thoughts to share with our audience tonight?
I sure do, Jody. Thanks so much. And I want to thank everyone for their thoughtful questions. Boy, we got some good ones tonight. I know we are all anxious to get back to life as normal. And what's clear is that we're getting closer and closer to that reality. These next few months are going to be critical. And we all have to continue listening to the advice of public health, even as we see more reopenings. It will be especially important when we see more reopenings. Right now, we are in a race against the variants of concern and the vaccine. We have lost too many Mississaugans this virus already, family members, friends, and neighbors. And our small business community has been absolutely devastated. But we have to be extremely cautious right now to avoid that third wave. And I will continue advocating to the province to ensure Mississauga is treated fairly in both terms of reopening plans, but also with vaccine allocations. I want to thank everyone in Mississauga who continues to follow public health guidelines and for making huge sacrifices for the collective good. And I want to thank everyone who joined us tonight on this call, including our panelists who have taken time off from the front lines to answer your questions. I also want to thank again Mississauga staff and our city councillors who joined us, especially the councillors, Councillor Stephen Dasko from Ward 1, Councillor Karen Rass of Ward 2, Councillor Chris Fonseca of Ward 3, Councillor John Kovac of Ward 4, Councillor Ron Starr of Ward 6, Councillor Deepika Demirla of Ward 7, Councillor Matt Mahoney of Ward 8, Councillor Pat Sato of Ward 9, and Councillor Sue McFadden of Ward 10. We will continue to keep you up to date on all the progress of our vaccine rollout. Updates can be found at mississauga.ca/coronavirus, as well on the, as well as on the Region of Peel's website at peelregion.ca/coronavirus. And also remember, if you want to register for the vaccine, please go to trilliumhealthpartners.ca. You can register there and they will be in touch with you. They're registering 80 plus now. If you don't have a computer, then please call. The phone number is, once again, 905-791-5202. Better days are ahead, Mississauga. Please let me also thank our guest panelists, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health, as well as Michelle DeManuel, who is the CEO of our Trillium Health Partners, Sean McKenna, Staff Superintendent at Peel Regional Police, Peter Dundas, the Chief of Peel Paramedics, and Brian Laundry, also from Peel Region with Peel Public Health. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us once again, and again for your very thoughtful questions. Please have a good night, and remember, please continue to stay healthy and stay safe and be kind to others. Thank you.